David Cassidy, welcome to GLR.
Thank you.
I think you're probably the biggest star I've ever interviewed.
Well, actually, I'm not that tall. I'm
no. You're not really, are you?
No, I'm not.
In fact, you're probably only about as tall as me.
Well, there you go. So, not that big a star.
Can I just... I lied this morning, because I've just got this agent, and you have to write down all your measurements and everything and hand them in. Mm. And I'm only 5'7", and I put 5'8".
Yeah, I always lie about mine,
I just thought, because otherwise someone's going to go, we need someone to do this.
Yeah.
5'7", oh, he's a bit of a short house, isn't he? So I thought, you know, 5'8", when I get there, I'll charm them, or I'll wear my hair big or something.
Yeah, I'm only 5'8", but I always say I'm like 6'1".
Yeah.
It's important.
You are 5'8", are you? Well, I'm the same height as you, I am 5'8" as well, because we're both lying. So, David, teenage heartthrob.
Oh, please. No. That teenage heartthrob thing. No.
What? I haven't even finished my question yet.
You're asking a question. David, teenage heartthrob. I go, oh, no.
Yeah.
Instantly defensive. Oh. You know, it's the American in me.
That's all right. All right, let's move on from...
Thank you.
Won't even mention any of that.
Thank you.
What was all that like, though?
Spare me all that.
No, let me just ask you that one question. What was all that like when people just kept going,
Yeah, it was thrilling. It was much like that. You know, I think that any time, instantly your credibility goes right out the window. So you had a lot of these people coming around going, for me, it was, it's always great to have people that care about you and all that. But the problem is that when...
They just used to chase you around and you couldn't get in taxes.
But the fame became more... of a burden to carry, and that kind of fame, I think, is always associated with people who are non-credible. And I started as an actor, and I played in bands and in high school and stuff, and I became a professional actor right out of high school. And I worked in the theater and on Broadway, and then I started working in television, and you know, I became a very successful young actor, and then I did this television series that changed people's perception of me probably forever. And
What was that?
It was called The Partridge Family.
That was it.
Yeah.
We had that.
Funny little show that changed the planet a little bit in the 70s. And I think in a way the stigma that is associated with being a sex symbol and all that stuff is a heavy burden, and I've heard a lot of other people who have had that. You know, Robert Redford has discussed it, and it becomes something that you resent having being labeled to begin with. I think all of us do, because it inhibits you from being anything else. It makes us all gives us the assumption that he's just that, as opposed to here he is, entertainer, actor, comedian, or all around just really a negative.
I don't want to talk about it anymore because you don't like talking about it, I can tell, and you've lost eye contact with me, and I know that my guests are unhappy when they start looking down, reading the graffiti.
How do I get out of here?
On the table.
How do I get out of this? How do I bail out of this?
So let's talk about Blood Brothers, because you've been, you did it in Broadway.
Yeah, I did it on Broadway in 93-4, and then I went on the road with, we did a national tour. I did it with my brother and Petula Clark.
Right, that's Sean Cassidy.
Yes, in fact, my brother Sean.
Yeah, just checking, I don't know if Petula was your brother, but no, Sean's your brother.
No.
Petula, she's your
aunt. I have two other brothers, which is why most people don't know that here in this country, but in America they do. Anyway, it wasn't Patrick or Ryan, it was Sean, and... I got to a radio station last night doing this, you know, all whirlwind PR tour before I open on Monday. I'm only here for 4 weeks, so I'm trying to make the most of it as opposed to keeping it a secret that I'm here. Mm-hmm. So I get to this radio station last night, and we did we recorded basically an international, they're calling it an international recording of it, but they told me it would be out last year. And lo and behold, it was never released. And I heard it for the first time last night. Oh, I heard a track off of it last night.
This is the soundtrack of the Blood Brothers.
Yeah. And Willie Russell, they played a track. Willie Russell is singing on it, singing the narrator's role and speaking the narrator's role, which was really quite captivating, I have to say.
I didn't know he did that. I mean, he obviously wrote that, and we know him.
He's a writer, and he's a playwright.
Playwright.
Yeah. Screenwriter.
Yeah, Education Rita, Dancing Through the Dark, I think it might have been him as well.
Something Through the Dark. It was, I think, of an adaptation from a play he wrote, Stags and Hens.
That's right, it was set in a nightclub, wasn't it?
Right, something like that, yeah.
But I didn't know he could sing, can he?
Yeah, he's sort of a folksy kind of a singer. Mm. He has that sort of folksiness, but he's got a real presence, you know. And he certainly is the voice and heart and soul of Liverpool. And probably why this role has been so, for me, so important in terms of people's perception of David Cassidy is that, you know, I think that no one fancied me being a working class Liverpoolian and aging 25 years as it's got a lot of, you know, it's very funny, but as Willie is, but it's really a lot of, it's pretty dark and pretty powerful stuff. Yeah. His life, you know, is quite a journey to take every night. And
I remember seeing it when it first opened in the West End, and I remember thinking it was a bit of a draining experience.
It was, yeah, and is. Hopefully.
A little bit serious at the end, isn't it?
It's pretty powerful stuff, yeah. And you see people that are, you know, are rocks go in there, guys that, you know, eat nuts and bolts for lunch. And to see them coming out, you know, weeping is, it's quite extraordinary for me.
Probably, they're probably rusting inside as well with all those nuts and bolts getting a bit damp, probably.
Well, I don't know. I can just tell you that for me, it's been a great, a wonderful ride. And I always wanted to do it over here because it is such a British play. And, you know, for me, I've had an awful lot of success in my life and my career here. And because what's happened as a result of doing it, and I've got a film and I'm in the middle of making the first record I've made in about 5 years now. Mm. And my 1996 is looking like the chances of me coming back are slim. I took this opportunity to come over here. I did Oxford and I did Bristol to kind of get back into the role. And I'm going to be here for 4 weeks at the Phoenix Theatre.
You were on tour with Clodagh Rodgers, I think. Was Mrs.
Johnson? Yeah, just, yeah, these past few weeks.
Uh-huh. You've got, is it Stephanie Lawrence?
Yeah. Yeah, she's fantastic. What I did it? Time with her, actually, in the West End.
You were in
the musical Time.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. I always refer to it as that, too.
Doing Time.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, she was your cellmate.
Didn't you do Time? Yeah, I did. Yeah. You saw it, obviously. It was a huge hit and very successful, but...
I didn't see it, actually.
The play, well, it was a very successful play, but play lacked a certain amount of substance. Great special effects and remarkable.
Well, you're kind of telling me it's rubbish, was it?
Well, I wouldn't say it was rubbish, but it was hard to make the play work every night, and you had to really work very hard at it. And it relied upon more of its effects, as opposed to Blood Brothers, which relies upon the word.
Mm. And great songs.
Yeah. Well, really, it's, you know, the piece has got, you know, it's a wonderful piece, and that's why it's been now.
And Blood Brothers just keeps going, doesn't it? And they just keep bringing in new people to do the roles. It never...
Yeah, it does. Like any musical, I suppose, like Evita did for years, and certainly what's Phantom Bell on its probably 10th Phantom. Who knows after Michael Crawford's left?
Well, the good thing is you can't see who it is anyway.
No, just got you couldn't tell it was him, that's right. That's right. Anybody wears that mask.
It could just be any old
Look guy. Who's wearing the mask now.
Yeah. I mean, nobody, who knows who it is? It's probably just...
No, I'm sure he's a very talented actor.
No,
but
it's probably some dodgy B-list actor, and they just shove that half of a cornflakes packet on his face and somebody else singing.
You don't have to do equity benefits like I do.
No.
I'm sure he's a very talented actor.
Yes, I'm sure he is. Let's hear it for whoever.
Let's hear it for him, yeah.
David, we'll talk some more after the travel.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeremy, and BBC, Greater London Radio, with 2020 travel news direct from Scotland Yard. Well, first, some good news, just by way of a check. Our travel update at 3:40.
Jeremy Nicholas with you on GLR. Just giving David Cassidy the hard sell about GLR.
Mm.
I think you'll definitely be tuned in for the rest of your stay in London, won't you?
I can't wait. This is great. Yeah. GLR. We were talking about what has happened. You know, I can remember coming over here in the early, mid-70s, and there were like four radio stations. That was it. Mm. And now there are all kinds of them, and I was trying to find out what exactly this station is and was. Because if you're not here, and they take you around on these press, you know, tours, and you go in and you speak to people and you think, who are they?
You don't know who they are, do you?
Well, not really, unless you don't have a what is the identity of the station? And you told me, in fact, that it was people who really are low-level intelligence and like ourselves who are sitting here, you know, babbling on about
We basically aim at very thick people that like dance music. That's our target audience. And anyone
Hey, I'm the right guy for you then.
Yeah, that's why we got you in. We'll give you a sticker on the way out, a car sticker.
Groovy. I'll play some disco music.
And you've just got a sticker on every cab that you go on, right? We'll give you lots of them. because otherwise you have to keep peeling it off when you got out. That wouldn't.
That's yeah.
That wouldn't.
That's all your guests are doing. That
wouldn't work very well at
no,
all.
No, not at all.
I'm just talking rubbish, aren't I? Now I know that you were in LA for the earthquake, weren't you? We weren't there for that. You didn't like think, "Oh, I'll go there."
Actually, I was there specifically for that. I flew in 2 days before, and I'd spent 2 days an entire year in Los Angeles, and one of the 2 days was the earthquake, and in fact, one of the most significant days of my life because it really changed my lifestyle and our lifestyle, my wife and my son as well, because we decided that was the last time we wanted to be there.
Is that them through there?
Yeah, that's them. Yeah, hey. That's me, son.
Hello.
Bo. And
because I know that it's just, I just thought loads of people just follow you around, and I thought they probably just came in off the street.
Picked the spot up. Yeah, I was there, and we wrote a... Oh, it's a long story, but we changed locations. I was on Broadway at the time, and I was
How long a story is it? Have I got time to go to the
No,
movie?
Actually, you don't.
Okay.
It'll be very quick.
No,
and then,
no, it's fine.
And then we left. And then it's over.
No, no.
And that was the end of the story.
I've supported your story. You decided to write this thing. It's kind of rebuild LA anthem, yeah?
Yeah. We tried to assist people. But to make it even shorter than that, more significantly... what happened on that particular day really changed my sort of priority in terms of what I wanted to do with my life, which is not to sit around Los Angeles and scratch my head every day and wonder why. Mm-hmm. But I've really rebuilt my whole life and my career from New York now. And my family, you know, to go to sleep at night and know that the earth underneath your feet is not going to crumble. Mm-hmm. And the people up the street from us, on a really very serious note, they died. And all of the houses around us were condemned. And we were very lucky to come away with our lives. And once you have that kind of an experience, you know, it makes you reassess, you know, what am I doing here? A, do I really need to be here? And do I really want to do another television series?
Yeah.
Which, if you're not as an actor, what are you doing there? Because the air is disgusting. And
did you want to do another television
series? No, not really. I mean, it's not that I didn't want to do another television series, but that I have other things I wanted to do. It's not about doing a television series, it's about the work and doing good work, you know, if you're writing songs or doing anything artistic, is what it's about. Mm. So I'm very thrilled to be here and to do good work.
Yeah. And now you're in New York, are you going to stay there forever?
Yeah, I hope so. Well, I don't know. Who knows forever? I've been told by a lot of people, you know, every year or two you hear about the next place, and now it's Ireland. Everybody I know is moving to Ireland.
That's where all the films
going
are being
to
made.
Dublin. Yeah, got to go to Dublin. Yeah. Which, being, you know, a descendant, an Irish descendant.
I knew you were going to say that. All Americans say, actually,
well,
I'm
Cassidy,
Irish.
Well, Cassidy, you would have
here.
To say Cassidy's probably Irish.
I think you've probably got as good a claim as anyone, David. Yeah. Where
my about? Brothers are Sean, Patrick, and Ryan, so you'd think probably.
Yes. But whereabouts from then?
County Clare, I think my family's from, but I read the other day that Clinton apparently is a descendant of Cassidy. So, you know, Bill and I are probably somewhat related.
Mm. Have you ever met Bill?
Yeah, actually, we were at the White House in Washington, D.C. Last year and cruised through. He was in the Oval Office and we waved at one another.
Yeah. Because he was, when he came over to Belfast, he thought GLR was a national station. He'd be able to pick it up there. He was furious.
Oh,
man. Danny had to keep sending cassettes.
I can only imagine.
To get him out there.
I would have been rather pissed myself, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think you might go and live in Ireland? Because the income tax is massive there, you know.
Oh, really?
Something like unless, 50%?
Unless you're an artist, I understand, and it's free.
Oh, is it?
Mm. That's what I was told. But
well, they do give good breaks for artists because like loads of films are being made in Ireland.
Yeah.
Like even Dickens' things set in London, they're being filmed in Ireland because it's much cheaper.
Well, I think it's probably the Irish, the sense of that, you know, there's something very romantic about it because people, you know, they don't ever show up for work and they, you know, they have that attitude of, that's the perception is that, you know, well, Irish, you know, the bus will be along.
You're going to make a lot of friends there if you start talking that sort of rubbish,
are
David.
Are you kidding?
They're going to hate you if you say that.
Well, I should hope not. I mean, I'm going to try and get over there and go on vacation there. And I meant that in the best possible light that, you know, there's a sense of, they don't take life as seriously as the rest of the world. And there's a sense of, well, if it's raining, let's, you know, why get depressed about it? It's it's just gonna be raining again tomorrow.
Let me ask you a last thing about how you play a Liverpool character being an American, because my knowledge of seeing Americans playing English people is that it doesn't matter.
It's crap, isn't it?
Yeah. You see Americans playing English people in films and it's, oh, hello,
hey.
How are you? Jolly good, old chum.
Well, the American production of Blood Brothers really did not define, I would have to say, the Liverpudlian accent terribly well. There were actors who had it and could do it fairly well. And then there were a few actors who had no idea. Mm. They were doing something half Northern, half Irish, half, you know, it Cockney. Yeah. We all end up sounding a little like Dick Van Dyke, and unfortunately.
Well, he was spot on with it.
Wasn't he, though?
Go, blimey, love a duck, go, leave it out. Oh, my good governor, look at these chimney sticks.
Liverpool is a wonderful accent because it's very distinct, and because, I guess, of Beatlemania in the 60s.
Have you just been listening to, like, loads of Beatles?
No, I haven't. No, I always listen to them because I grew up in the 60s, and you know, they were my favorite band of the time, and I got to know a couple of them, especially John. I got to know pretty well, and you know, I think what Liverpool represents in many ways, the humor and the soul, and is what Blood Brothers is, and I've tried to be as authentic about it, and I've been complimented by, you know, some of the Liverpool press came over to America and wrote some pieces about, you know, the fact that I copped it pretty well. But
really, they went right out to Broadway just like that.
Yeah, well, I think the show really is their show.
Yeah, it's really
it's Liverpool's show.
City adopted it. Yeah.
Oh, I would say so. They just played on this tour. They just played the Empire, and apparently it was, you know, they broke records again. Every time it goes back there, it's a gigantic success because it is. Mm. And Willie, I think what he writes about and the soul of Liverpool. So I've tried to be as authentic as I could possibly get and scrutinize the accent because it's, you know, it's important, especially.
Can you do it? Can you do it for us? Just put you on the spot. It's a bit.
David's
unfair.
Crap. Mickey's really good, but
go on, do your Mickey.
I really can't. no.
Oh,
because if I do it now, I'm naff, then I'll walk away going, oh, why did I do that? You know.
Right. What's he called? He's called Mickey who?
Mickey Johnston.
Right.
And
I'll just say something like, hello, Mickey Johnston, pleased to meet you. Someone. I'll get you into it by doing. I'll build a bit of Scouting. Oh, hey lad, who are you then?
Eddie, it doesn't really matter, does it? So that's about it.
That's all right.
That's about it. Yeah,
that's
all right.
That's for it.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's spot on.
I start to get choked up when I start to do it. The pressure's on me now.
I said that was the last question. Let me just ask you, John Lennon, I mean, as someone that's met him, what was he like?
He was a very, all of the things that you may have heard about him, his humor was probably the most apparent thing about John Lennon, his wit and his humor, which was there. He was a very complex guy, had a very dark side. I was with him when he went through a serious drinking period when he was making the rock and roll album in L.A. And both with Yoko when he was much more together and after, and then when he got back with her again. So he was a very complex, a wonderful guy. I got drunk as hell with him on New Year's Eve, 1974-5, I think it was, that night. He came over to my house with a mutual friend of ours, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we sat up in my room all night and played Beatles songs, and he couldn't remember half of them, because I learned how to play guitar on them. And I can remember sitting there playing in my room, and we were both just, you know, legless and sort of falling, love me, you know. It was that for me. I can remember there was a moment as I was doing it, I remembered I was having to reteach him a couple of them because he'd forgotten the chords and things. Thinking the irony of this, if you told anybody about it, they wouldn't have believed it, you know. So it was kind of a thrill. Those guys were certainly heroes of mine growing up, musically. I never idolized anybody, but I think that from inspirationally, millions of young guys like myself went out and bought electric guitars after they saw them on television when they got to America, and I certainly was one of them.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have played in bands had they not broken. I think I probably would have been, you know, still singing, but I don't think I would have played music, and I don't think I would have become a songwriter had I not been influenced so heavily by them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
David, thanks.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Pleasure
it's been
to great. Meet you. I'm surprised you didn't take your gloves off, but it's a bit chilly in here, isn't it?
I like to keep them on because, it's sort of like a security blanket for me, and also it's very dirty in here, so.
David Casti, thanks for joining us.
It's been great.
David's appearing in Blood Brothers in the West End for, what, just 4 weeks?
4 weeks, yeah.
Starting next...
Monday night.
Yeah, brilliant.